Hello, everybody. Hello. Friday. How you doing, Paul?
I'm good. How are you?
How are you, Charlie?
I'm doing good. Anyway, yes, things are. It's a fantastic day here in New York. I'm doing great.
Yeah.
Yes. All right. Fantastic. All right. I got my coffee, and I'm ready to go. So
show me. What do you got for coffee? What is it? Iced coffee?
Iced coffee. I usually, whenever I get coffee, I get it straight, just a venti cold brew.
So, dude, cheers. I'm back on the espresso. Right on.
There you go.
Cheers.
Got my favorite best cheers. Sister mug.
There you go.
Best sister. Best sister. I like it. All right. Let me kick this off. Sure. Welcome back to the Gregory and Paul Show.
I'm Paul.
I'm Gregory. And we break down the latest in startups, SaaS, AI, and whatever the internet is debating this week. We always aim for smart takes. And I personally end up with lots of stupid ones, but that's okay. I know I'll hit on a few scorchers. And of course, we love memes way too much.
We love memes. So we live stream on X and LinkedIn every Friday at noon Pacific and 3 p.m. Eastern. Then we post straight to YouTube. Someday we'll get this on all the platforms, including all the podcasts. I think the plan is, whenever Paul gets around to figuring that out, we'll launch on Apple, Spotify, and Google.
I like this running joke that we keep promising everybody we're going to put it on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, and then we still haven't done it. It's fine.
Yeah. I'm happy to help, honest. Like, one of these days.
we need help. It's like we're both so busy. We both have these, like, we're like victim of our own success, right? Like, our business is scaling, we're doing all this fun stuff, and then we like doing this live stream, and it's just like not a priority.
Now I'm gonna do research and I'm gonna help you on this. So
yeah. Okay. All right, let me introduce you. I'm so glad that you came on the live stream today. Absolutely. I wrote you up this very professional bio that I hope you read, because I have no idea if any of it's accurate or not.
Yeah. So, it's very similar to my LinkedIn copy. That's pretty LA, but yes.
Good. That's the idea. All right, so we have today Charlie in the arena.
Yes.
In the arena. Is a New York City-based AI systems architect, and I wore my Code New York Coinbase hackathon t-shirt because you inspired me, because I love New York City.
Yes.
You are entrepreneur, fractional CTO, and the founder of Razru, a synthetic data and AI simulations company.
Yes.
And MakeBind, which transforms raw data into ready-to-ship work packages.
Yes.
And you have deep expertise in spanning DevOps, back-end, front-end, generative AI, R&D, and help scale products for startups, enterprise, and academic institutions?
Yes.
All right.
Correct, as they say.
They say what?
Cracked, as they say, cracked founder, cracked developer, as they say in the streets. So there you go. I'm amongst fellow cracked individuals. But yeah,
I got a whole other paragraph here. Known for building micro but mighty engineering teams, he specializes in AI-first product design, evaluation frameworks, cutting-edge architectures that blend RAG, RLHF, semantic memory. And beyond tech, Charlie is a community builder, open knowledge advocate, and believer in human-centered innovation that raises the quality of life, not just quarterly numbers.
Yes. Welcome. Thank you. Glad to be here. Great people. You know, both of you, we go way back, and just always a good time talking about the world and connecting and the like. So thank you for having me and letting me be here.
Yes, it's fun to have all of the people that we goof around with on X onto the show and have like a fairly serious discussion, but obviously not too serious. We want to keep it fun. That's what I like about X, is like people discuss really in-depth topics, complicated topics, sophisticated topics, but we always keep it light, keep it fun. I think I like the mix of that. A lot. So Charlie, why don't you tell us about what you're doing with Razru?
Yeah, we've been at this project for 7-6 years now. And the culmination of where we're at right now is for non-technical founding teams to sort of, to not sort of, to be able to construct the early technical phase, let's say the first 6 months on their own. So we give them a series of tickets, and let's say they want to create a, whatever, an AI chat application. And so we pull from this giant repository of tickets and code for them to just construct this at 100% quality. And it looks exactly synonymous to what a developer would make. So we're also bridging between the non-technical founders and the developers. And that's what we're offering. That's what we offer right now. And this is just the journey we've been on. And it's an, I guess, behind the scenes, a very complex system, but the idea is relatively simple, which is just pre-make the code, pre-make the tickets, and then use AI to be able to just flood that data. And so we can confidently tell non-technical founders that don't necessarily have experience with, let's say, coding, we can give you 100% quality and this will 100% work as expected. And of course, that's a remarkable product. And that idea can go over to many other industries, not just product design and coding. And that's what we're up to for the most part.
Explain to me and to everyone, like, how is this different from like Lovable and some of the vibe coding stuff? Because like on the surface, it sounds similar.
Right. And the Lovable would be for the prototyping phase. And I would say that it's also for people with technical experience. I feel very much so that way, because once they get past the initial prototyping phase, they're sort of a customizability they can't really do on their own. They could potentially use a vibe coding tool. So we're really trying to tackle the non-technical market for starters. And I've come across quite a bit of founding teams. I'm going to turn on a fan here. I think my camera here is slowing down a bit. Just make sure my system doesn't heat up. So if the volume's annoying, let me know. Does it sound good? Okay, good. So we offer that to just those non-technical founders. And then also beyond that, beyond the customization is also something that we offer. So there's that whole large market. And then there are additional tools that we do break off from that tree, which is individual coding tools and then also individual project management tools. And we have platforms for both of those. But yeah, the initial market right now from the people that we're talking to and what they're interested in, because the developers they talk to want to charge them $10,000 or $15,000 a month, and they're not sure where to go for the initial product. And so Lovable for them isn't even something that they can use. And so that's the demographic we're targeting at the moment.
So it does the complete build, where like a lot of these other tools are a better fit for like just prototyping?
Yeah, exactly. So these tools are for prototyping. This is a tool for production grade applications, and then also just giving it to them in a very intuitive way that they're used to, which is chat and tickets. So they can just say, hey, I want to create this project, and I can create it. And with Lovable, once again, the founders I'm talking to, for them, Lovable is still too technical for them to work with. And so that's that.
So their input are like prompts to stories.
Exactly. Right,
like a project management. Okay. So they create tickets, maybe on natural language. They're used to store user stories, user acceptance criteria, in a human language, and then outcomes the actual product. And they test it by, and do you offer testing as well based on those criteria?
We offer the testing, and this is the cool thing about the product, is that the testing happens before it actually goes over to them.
Okay, that's fair.
So, and that's a large part of the piece of what we do behind the scenes, is that we have a whole quality layer to make sure that everything is pre-written.
Yeah.
So as opposed to, let's say, V0 or Lovable, that's the big distinction of what makes us production grade, where they'll have their stuff happen on demand. All the code that we're giving them happens behind the scenes. And then once they get to beyond what we have available, then the AI and customization piece kicks in, but it's still being influenced by existing code in our general like data repository. Okay, and that's the synthetic data and the AI simulation stuff that we do is the driving engine that enables that.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. So like, it would be really cool if you sold this to, you know, those agile coaches, the people who implement, you know, behavior-driven development, agile mm-hmm. coaches who want, goes into organization, teaches them how to basically do what you just described, but retrofitting existing teams to do this, right? Like, I've always struggled. Mm-hmm. It's always a pain to convert teams to work like this, but actually, according to Agile and all of these coaches, that this is the proper way, right? You make sure your application is correct and actually fits the requirement before you sit down and the engineers build it. So this is pretty cool. How did you kind of like come across this idea?
So this idea was pre-AI, and the goal was that we would create this system so that the entire world can contribute to a ginormous system. When AI happened, we started shifting towards, let's lean very heavily into the AI of creating this code, creating these tickets, soon to create these designs, and then let's have humans go in and perfect so that we can then offer that to the end user at 100% quality. And that's the big piece that we do, which is we can guarantee 100% quality, that it will work. And for that reason, we're able to bridge to the non-technical teams and everything that entails. And so that was, yeah, the idea came from pre-AI, and then in the post-AI role, we were thinking, okay, what can we really offer based on this idea that we had in our mind? And that's quality, and the focus on non-technical teams, and then talking to the customers and the users and what they're potentially interested in paying. That's sort of the demographic that we're focusing on. And it's quite a large demographic because these people, once again, are paying $10,000 a month for developers. It's a little bit too much money for them to even begin the project. But for something like this, that's $1,000 a month per project, because we also offer, let's say, 10 hours a month developers. It's worthwhile for them. And so then we're able to take that money and then pump it back into the data upload cycle, and potentially also monetize developers that want to use our system to upload code. So it has this great ecosystem, and then we can just do very interesting things, which might be beyond the scope of this conversation, but we might be able to then, let's say, create a Razru SMP, which is this protocol where we can take our data and plug and play it into Cursor. So now Cursor developers have correct data automatically, and they pay us $10 a month to use our SCP or SM. Yeah. And then for tickets, they can also use the Razru SCP, whatever. I forget the model context protocol, right? SCP, MCP. And they can also use that for project management. So it's just this great mechanism or a great ecosystem. But yeah, right now, just the focus is on the non-technical founders that I've been talking to that really like the idea, and I can see it as starting to gain a little bit of momentum.
So who is the ideal customer, or who are your customers now for this?
Yeah, the ideal customers, and our customers are sort of people we're talking to at the initial stages, but they're two founders that have professional experience in a field and want to get into an application of XYZ, which is really common. I think they're more common than the technical founding teams. There's someone who works for a nursing home, or someone who works in government, or works in the restaurant space, or they're a barber and they want to create this application. And then that's our main goal there. And these are people that are interested in it, and that's our main customers. And it's so much easier to monetize than $20 a month for Lovable. These people are willing to pay $1,000 a month for something like this because it's way cheaper than the alternative. Especially
those examples you gave, are those people using it now? Like who are the people that are using it today?
We have very little people using it today.
Okay.
And these are just the people I've spoken to on through my connections and just being building tons of products, trying to sell it, just sort of the idea and the feel I'm getting from the room right now of who would be interested in it.
So I see. Okay. Got it. So, interesting.
The project management only side of things, really isn't enough. We have like an AI project management tool that could whip up entire projects and the like. But, what we found is that, people right now are just kind of looking for more of off the shelf for everything. So anywho, yes. So we'll see where it goes. But, right now it looks pretty good.
Awesome. Paul, do you have any questions about his product or?
No, this sounds awesome.
Thank you.
Yeah. Can we test it? Can we test this today?
Yeah, absolutely.
How do we find?
Makemind.com. And what's the problem I'm trying to fix? I don't know who this person on X is, but yeah, it's makemind.com. And let me actually click on that X, see if I can get to that. But it's
yeah, we could show it too. Yeah, Makebind.
Yeah, it's makebind.com. And so the project management side of things is perfect. And right now we're integrating the code aspect.
Okay.
Which as soon as that kicks in, we're just gonna put it at $1,000 a month. And that's it. And the big piece once again is that we're able to monetize the data upload process as well. So we'll have developers go into our system that we have built already, which is on a completely different platform than makebind.com. We have an entire back office application, projects.razru.com and code.razru.com. And it's a whole data upload, synthetic data and AI simulations to have the AI create 100% quality as much as possible. And then humans go in and perfect. And then we have quality assurance layers. It's like a whole eval system. AI system as well. So
what was it URL again? I couldn't find
it. Makebind.com. Let me see if I can find the, let me go to x.com and try here. And respond.
This is it, right? Makebind, this one.
Makebind.
Yeah. Okay.
I got it. Don't worry, you guys.
And then you would have to click get started in order to get going and everything.
But, yeah. So this is Makebind and this is the project management piece and you get started here.
Exactly.
And you create an account and whatever. Okay, got it. And then tell me just because I want to move on and make sure we cover a couple of the topics, but help me understand the synthetic data piece. Like what is that used for?
Yes. And so Paul, something tells me Paul's been doing this a lot, but the synthetic piece is the most beautiful aspect of the AI generation aspect, and which is that we're able to put many guardrails into the data production process. And we're able to then like snap our fingers more or less and create 30 tickets and let's say 20,000 lines of code that are all relevant to the specific task at hand. And so the synthetic data generation is really simple at ground zero, which is, hey AI, create for me code and create for me tickets. But what we do and what other synthetic data shops are doing, although I would argue we're probably one of the more sophisticated ones, is we add specific guardrails along the way. Like, here's how the ticket should be structured. Use other tickets and use other code snippets that we have in our giant repository to influence how you generate this code. Use these specific technologies in order to get this task done. Only focus on this specific subset of the feature, loop through it again to make sure it doesn't have problem XYZ. If a user wants to go in and reorder the tickets or update them, give them a simple chat interface, which Makebind currently does, so they can then update that data that's been synthetically generated. Use agents to pull in all the code in the code base and compare it. So that whole synthetic data generation process is let's get AI to 100% quality as much as possible. And every week we're updating the synthetic data pipeline to make sure that it's as good as it possibly can get. And that's the whole other side of the business, which we probably won't touch anytime soon, which is how can we maybe have our own data that we can sell maybe to AI shops that might be interested, or how can we turn this into a post AGI platform something that could allow AGIs to be more sophisticated with more relevant data. So that's, but yeah, that synthetic data in short is, do I pay for this data? Yes, via the AI, but in time, labor cost. But the AI ticket generation is, the synthetic data in short is, how can we get AI to 100% quality data using AI only? And what can we do in that pipeline to allow that to happen? And that's the synthetic data side of things. And that's also the AI simulations, which is trying to get to that 100% quality data using AI only.
What is the use case for the synthetic AI? I mean, the synthetic data.
Exactly. Perfect. And so for us specifically, because we're offering 100% quality code, so the synthetic data for us is really important, because we want to be able to create that code potentially in 5 minutes instead of, let's say, 5 hours. And so we want the AI to populate the 30 different code recipes with the snap of a finger, and then the human to just review it very quickly and say, that's wrong, this is wrong, I have this compilation error with my code, and just go in and fix the pieces that need fixing. And so synthetic data for us is just, how can we lower the time that it takes to create that perfect data, and just economies of scale and the whole, that sort of thing.
So it's like, in my mind, I would use a word like, it's used to fine tune the output.
Yeah.
Right. So you're, and, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Like in classic AI shops, they'll use synthetic data to train AI models. For us, we're more so using it to, let's create code as quickly as possible so that the humans can then go in and make that 100% quality with any mistakes it has. And now we can then offer that to non-technical teams with 100% guarantee that what we're giving them is perfect. And they can just trust our platform. We can be the Stripe of code or something like that. So that's,
that makes sense.
It's fascinating stuff. It's super interesting and it's exciting to watch. My favorite piece is like just watching the machines do like hundreds of thousands of data sets potentially. So it's exciting stuff. Yes.
All right. Let's move on. We want to talk some of the news items. And we've got Charlie here, so obviously we'll have him comment on it. We got three topics I want to make sure we get to today. First one is, what is AI actually good at? I'm sure you're gonna have a lot of opinions on this one, Charlie. So I'll share this. Yeah, here it is. This is the chart. This is a Stanford study, right? Yeah, Stanford.
Correct.
That, and this has been around X for a while, but they attempted, I would use the term, to quantify like all the different things that AI is good at, what it's not good at, and put it into a number of different dimensions. And ultimately they have like this four quadrants, right? With like the top green zone being, hey, these are the things that AI is conceivably really good at and could start doing right away, right? And then the bottom one is the stuff where like, hey, AI is probably like not great at this. And so not really something that we'd recommend. And then they plotted against like what all the people are trying to do with AI. And that's where this, like, I don't know if you remember this came out, but there was this, maybe let's use the term like disconnect, that there's a lot of people working on things that maybe are not what AI is great at or great at doing today. And so I thought this was a really interesting discussion for us, because I feel the same way about AI, that like there's all these things that it can do, or maybe even like I came to Paul and just said to him that, you know, I feel like there's all these things AI is really good at doing and people are actually underutilizing it for those things. They're trying to do like a lot of different things. And maybe people are trying to do a lot of things that like it's not good at, but there's all these things that it's actually great at and people are not using it. So the example that I would like to give is like all the funny images that we use to promote the show. Like I generate them all with AI. I think it's like an excellent use case. So like I did the image for you, Charlie, just took your photo off of LinkedIn, dropped it into ChatGPT with a sample of the artwork that I like and said, just add you into the illustration and did perfectly in seconds. It was like
really good. Yeah.
Amazing. It's amazing, right?
Yes. It made me really big like, too. It made me I found that yeah.
It's a great use case, and like it's really cool that it can do that. Do it easily. Like in the past, if I wanted to get this drawn, like it would be a lot of work, it would take a lot of time. Mm-hmm. And like I like this one because like, you know, it's not like a mission critical application. But I think it's a very good example of like something that it does extremely well and does it really low cost and does it really fast. And I don't feel like enough people are like taking advantage of those types of things right now, the things that like AI can do really, really well. And there's almost like too much emphasis on the things that like, I don't know if AI is ever going to do it really well. Mm-hmm. Right. Like I would even say like, look, we've had 15 years of like the self-driving car.
Perfect.
And I think it's a good example. Right. And I, as much as I am like a techno optimist, like, I've always been someone who is to some degree critical of self-driving, that there's a lot of use cases that I can come up with that I don't know if AI will ever solve it. Right. When you start to factor in unknowns like weather, and then you combine that with locations like Canada, like I'm just like, that sounds really hard. Like I get why self-driving car will work in Singapore or perhaps Palo Alto or Arizona. That sounds possible in a limited use case where it's a taxi. It doesn't like leave city streets. We can map all that stuff out. We can limit the access to places that are difficult.
Right.
But like the extreme weather in the far north is something that I don't see AI ever being able to overcome because it's just too unpredictable. Like you might just have this massive storm that like it's never ever experienced. And then what does it do like when it gets stuck? Like AI is not going to get out and push. So
yeah,
what do you guys think of that?
Okay. I definitely have thoughts. I'm not sure if I should go first or Paul.
No, take it.
Okay. I've thought about this before, this exact conversation in my head, many times. I have two thoughts. One of them is that the driverless car piece, absolutely, right? The question is will it ever get to a safety level better than present day humans? That's side A of the coin. And then side two of the coin is maybe we should focus on, let's call them like paintbrush industries, where you can update the results to get what you need. And so cars, you can do that, which is, you're right. We shouldn't be focusing on cars. We should be focusing on building, like building a house or building whatever, manufacturing or digital products, because you're able to say, bring this down, update it, do X, Y, Z. You know, AI, you did that incorrectly. And so you don't need 100% quality. So those are both sides of things. And I think we will probably, I'm more of a fan of the paintbrush aspect. And then from the Tesla side of things with self-driving cars, for instance, or Waymo, et cetera, that is the question of whether or not it will get to safety levels that are higher than present humans. And that's yet to be seen. But those are my two thoughts. And inside of you are two wolves, you know, that meme. So that would be it.
I think that's a pretty good take, right? Like,
right.
Our benchmark for AI and these tools is so much higher than what our benchmark for ourselves is. So we have to put it up to maybe like nearly 100% safety for us to actually roll it out, right? Even if humans' accidental rate is much higher, let's say. Mm-hmm. We're not good drivers. Like, all data says that we're not good drivers, except that we still do. One thing that I noticed for certain that CEOs and executives try to use AI at is like customer support. In what world do I want to like speak to a robot over a human when I'm struggling with something that your product or service offers? Like, it just makes no sense, right? Like, if I want to speak to a human as fast as possible, so that I can get service. And AI is just like, over the years, has not been able to deliver that.
Oh, I have a good perspective on this. Like, I worked on a few projects that we're trying to do, or we're doing like customer service stuff.
Yeah.
So you're correct that, like, I think with the use case you're talking about, like, I'm really frustrated. I'm really unhappy. I want my thing resolved. I want to like yell at somebody. Okay. That's a common use case, but like most, customer support calls are actually really mundane. And like, if you think of like consumer products, so most people call in and they're like, I lost my password. I don't know my email. Like, they're right. They're really basic. And so AI is actually quite good at resolving those. So like, it's something like the first 20-30%, it depends on obviously the type of questions and help that you need to provide. But AI is actually quite good at like eliminating a lot of the more basic stuff. It's the hard stuff where it's like, you guys overbilled me for this thing that I didn't want, I didn't know. Like, you need some kind of custom support and you need some therapy. Like, AI's not good at that. But like, right. there's a huge amount of like calls that happen that are completely trivial, and that AI can do it. And I mean, I don't have the data current to look at right now, but my guess would be that like,
high percentages,
and people were happy with that result, right? Like, oh, the AI solved it for me. It got my account unlocked. It got me my password. It solved this for me.
So coming from a tech perspective, right? Just fix the problem in the first place. You know, make it easy.
I know. Have a good product to start with.
Yes. Have a good product. Fix the actual issue. Right, like maybe
is a disaster. So, go ahead. Sorry.
No, you're absolutely right. Passwords is an absolute disaster. So let's have passwordless logins.
Who's the finance company that was really early with AI automation? I forget who's that. Do you know? You know who I'm talking about? There was a specific founder that ended up getting rid of their customer support team early on, and then ended up bringing them back. Or
Yeah. Klarna was really
Klarna. There you go.
Klarna was really big on like making all these announcements that they had, like customer service is one of the areas where that identified that they were like, we're replacing everybody with AI. And they did kind of backtrack on that one. Mm-hmm. They made like claims about marketing too. I looked really closely at this one point because like, where are they claiming they're getting all this efficiency from AI with marketing? And from what I could gather, it was like background image generation, like things that like, my answer would be like, you shouldn't be spending $1 million on licensing images for backgrounds anyway. Like, I felt like there are solutions that weren't necessarily AI based that still could have solved that problem in that case. Mm-hmm. But you're right that like they hired people back and maybe they were like overzealous with it.
Yeah.
But AI did do a good job. So the point I make perhaps like, maybe disagree with you guys on the self-driving car is like, I don't actually think it's necessary that AI meet the safety records humans at all. Like, I think that's irrelevant. I at least from like point I was making. Mm-hmm. Point I was making is that like, I think there's just things that AI will never overcome in a self-driving car. That there's too many, use cases that are, let's say extremely challenging and happen infrequently. It's not about safety at all. It's that like there's all these weather related issues, there's traffic issues, there's like road quality issues, there's like just I could just dream up in my own head, and I'm not that smart, like 100 of these things,
right?
And I don't see how AI could overcome it, or for AI to overcome it. Like I said, it can't get out and push the car. So what happens?
Right, you have to build it into the system. And unless you basically reach super intelligence, it's not possible to build it into the system, right?
Like, it would happen all the time when I was a little kid in Vermont where my mother lives. Like, it would snow really hard, and like people would have to get out and push the car like all the time, up hills and stuff like that. So like, AI can't solve that.
Human has to overwrite that, right? Like, no matter what, there's going to be edge cases where human takes over control. Mm-hmm. So like,
right.
Correct. So it'll probably be a stopgap between humans will still need to learn how to drive, to be behind the wheel, to be in a car, so that these emergency situations can be handled properly.
Yeah. Yeah. I've spent a lot of time thinking about it. So I think the solution is that remote driving
right,
is the by like a real person,
right,
is the like fallback or use case where like the AI can't solve this. Like if you're at scale, everything's working with, like if I was in the military or something, right, and I've got, because this is probably a more realistic use case where I actually, this is happening today.
Yeah.
All these drones are, but actually this is how they work, right? Drones are flying around and they're automated. And then something happens where it's like human intervention required.
There's
identified a target. We need something, right? And they just, it goes to human. So I think the same thing will happen in the car space is that we'll just default, or there'll be like a way to engage human oversight. And it'll solve all those problems. Like AI doesn't need to be 100% perfect in order for it to work at scale. So it's just a different way of like thinking about perhaps the design of the system and the design of the product than like being dogmatic about it having to be 100% AI.
And I think this is the elephant in the room with this conversation, is all of us have in the back of our head the lingering what if. What if it does get to 100%? Like, what if we're wrong? Because that's like such a huge tectonic shift in how we predict things. So that's always, I agree with you. I think like it will never be perfect. But then in the back of my head, I'm always thinking to myself, what if I'm wrong? What if there's a way it can simulate data or use a real world, you know, physics and map out trillions of situations and it actually becomes perfect? Like, what if? I don't think.
What if it can predict the future?
What if, you know, what if, when you put it that way, okay, fine.
I'll throw like a thought outside.
Yeah, okay, do it.
I'm ready. Here's the problem with AI right now, right? Mm-hmm. Driving is the perfect example. So it has to know how to make trade-offs. Trade-offs in a sense that it gets philosophical, as in you have a kid and you have an old person in front of you. You have to hit one of them. Which one would you choose?
That's already happened. The problem. Didn't you see the news article?
I did actually.
Yes. So
the person that it decided to crash into a car as opposed to hit the person, right? That happened.
Yes.
Right. So okay, now you need like the tech involved, now you need the engineers involved, the politicians involved, the family involved. How can you make these kind of trade-offs as a system? You can't. Like that's not possible. Unless you hold the AI individually liable, like we do with people.
Yeah, that's come up, right? That maybe AI could get licensed.
Yeah.
So, I actually think that.
Unless you the AI, right? The AI.
Well, I think, so the car one, the car one already exists. Like the car is already designed to crash into another car and not crash into a person. So like, I don't know if we already saw. I don't know if it's solved, but like, that's how we're coping.
It made a choice. It made a choice. Right.
We're managing it. Yeah. But like, this has come up. Like, so Freeberg was talking on the All In podcast about this. Like, why not let AI get licensed in certain types of medicine so it can make recommendations and do things? And I actually think it's quite logical that there'll be certain areas where like AI takes a test and it gets licensed and we treat it kind of like a person.
Yeah.
And in medicine and certain areas, like that's how we actually manage it.
But then the problem, like, so, you know, like we're getting to the medical field, right? Yes. It takes 10 years for you to get licensed. The 10 years, yes, it's tough because of the actual knowledge, but it really is just like give you long enough time for you to think about all of these problems, right? To like kind of get philosophical with yourself. With AI, it's like, what's that even look like? How much time do we give it so that it can say, hey, if this situation happens, I'm gonna pick choice A versus choice B?
Well, I just think you have it, I would just fall back on my like, it's a design problem. So that would be my answer to your question, right? Is like, you're correct. There are these like philosophical things that like there's not like a right answer. There are things that we need to like debate and discuss, and there's just imperfect solutions to those problems, right? Like if AI makes a mistake in heart surgery, what do we do? But like what I would say is like, look, which I think this goes back to the initial like kind of like a discussion here, is like, what is AI good at?
Exactly.
So I think it's good at certain things, like it's better at examining x-rays than people are. Right. So like We just employ it in the places where like it's better than like a person. And so we have a better outcome. That would be my suggestion is like, stop trying to force it to do things that like are hard or difficult or it's not good at, and just continue to like build solutions and systems and design things so that the AI is doing the things that it's capable at.
But then that kind of like gets into the problem. It's like a little kid, right? If you just let the little kid do things that it's good at, then it might not develop into like a what we consider as like a well-rounded person, an adult, right? So like, I think there's still lots of room for us to figure this out. Like going back to your doctor, yeah, they can look at x-rays. They can identify things really, really fast and well.
Right.
But then let's say in surgery, if the choice is, God forbid, like a mom's life versus her baby's life, right? Mm. How, like, what choice do you make as the AI? Mm. It's impossible. It's impossible for a human, but it's even more impossible for her.
Doctors make those choices all the time.
Correct. Correct.
So AI will just make the choice.
But then there always will be under the scrutiny of like, is there bias, right? Because then
people are biased. So
yeah, but we can't measure the person.
We can measure people.
The bias, like it's not quantitative.
We can quantify the bias.
You think the doctor's gets measured?
I think we can. I think it's technically possible to do.
So unless we're willing to do that.
I think you're making my original point, which is like everyone's worried too much about all the things that AI is bad at. And we should just worry about things that AI is good at. And just do those things. That's it. Just have it do those things. And then there's all these things it's not great at or we haven't figured out or we just haven't come to like a certain sense of like alignment and agreement as a civilization about how we treat it. And so those are unknown. And like we just throw those in the unknown bucket for now. But like the x-ray one, like we all agree, it's like way better at examining these x-rays than people are. So let's just use it to do that.
Let them do more of that.
Paul, I'm sure that the AI that you create will be extremely well-rounded. Charlie, you have any perspective on this or are you being quiet over there?
No, I think this topic, I'm like beating a dead horse.
Okay. Yeah,
that's kind of
all right. We got a fun one then. Let's move on to the here it is. I'll bring this up. So this is a good one. Paul, you like this one?
I love this one. Do you want me to
got it. Yeah, you go ahead. You kick it off.
Okay. So AI Barbie. Right? What does it mean? Sorry, AI Barbie powered by OpenAI. So maybe ChatGPT or a new GPT, I'm not sure. So imagine Barbie, instead of having predefined set number of messages that it can repeat, you can actually talk to it.
Is that what it's going to do? Like you could have like a full-on conversation with Barbie and it's like powered by ChatGPT?
Isn't that the point? If that's not the point, then I don't know why we're talking about this.
I don't know what the point is.
One of the highlights it says Barbie that can hold genuine live conversations. That was one of the paragraphs there.
I love that we pulled the article from the IEEE.
Spectrum IEEE, a proper engineering publication.
Oh my god, dude! This is just a little comment, but like. One of my first jobs ever in New York City in like graphics was scanning in line art of engineering diagrams for the IEEE printed newsletter, like in like 92 or something.
How far we have come?
IEEE. I remember like, oh my God, dude, I was like scanning in these things for these guys. And like every article had like 100 of these like engineering diagrams of their like, it was mostly like hardware stuff too. Like,
right.
I think it's all hardware. I don't even know. Anyway, AI Barbie. When I read this, like, in concept, if you told me, like, hey, we're going to make this toy and it's going to be AI powered and it can, like, have a conversation, I'd be like, that's really cool. And then when I saw, like, AI Barbie, I felt so creeped out by the whole thing. I don't know.
But, I mean, Charlie,
Charlie, would you buy AI Barbie for your daughter or your cousin or relative?
Probably for me personally, I don't think I would. I wouldn't trust it enough at this point. It would just, it can talk about anything it wants to.
Right.
Right.
That would be problematic. I think it's.
Yeah. Like if you jailbreak it and stuff, it just seems, yeah.
You can hack it remotely somehow.
Yeah. Like the classic question of like a kid asking, like, how do babies happen? Or like, where did, you know, their brother come from? Or how do humans exist? And so, just get into a whole thing of that. Like ideology, I think, is also an important aspect. Like it could be a right answer, just not.
Right. Want right. It
to be
so,
as well.
So interestingly, so here's some more interesting next, local AIs, right? Like if by some point in the future, we can actually embed a local AI into a Barbie doll. It's a little bit Black Mirror-like, as you have like a super intelligence inside a Barbie doll
that's
that
awesome.
The kids talk to.
I'm a fan of that. That I think is cool.
Right? And then maybe it has access to like the family's AI, household AI, right? So it learns from everybody in the household, has access to the household.
Dude,
and now,
it's creepy.
Yeah, it's Black Mirror. It's completely Black Mirror, of course.
It's but, like, it's so funny because do you remember Furby?
Yeah, yes. Yeah.
The Furby. There was a toy that like was supposed to be this like, it was like pre-AI or as a long time ago, but it's supposed to be this little like kind of gremlin thing that would do stuff and talk. And like at the time I thought it was like really cool, but it's so weird. Like now that like AI kind of exists in some form, like
it could
I found
be,
it creeped out like an AI doll. Like it's like Chucky.
Okay. Now that you mentioned the family AI, though, you actually have me sold because that I actually think is cool and it beats television. So I think I would probably want to. There was a
family. How does family AI work? Explain this to me.
Well, like I mean, everybody's gonna have a personalized AI in the pocket, right? So now you just need like a chief of staff AI for your family.
That sounds really lame.
AI that controls all of your household stuff, you know?
Can I give it like a cool title? Like
whatever you want.
Director of action sports or something cool.
Exactly, yeah. Like chief happiness officer. There you go.
That's cool. Okay. Family happiness officer or something. I don't know if it'd be an officer. Can it just
President
be like
Barbie or something?
Friend.
You know? Yeah, or all just right. Like, you know, that aunt, you know?
Right.
Uncle AI, Uncle Brock.
Okay, so is AI Barbie in the things that ChatGPT and AI are not good at bucket, or things that it is good at bucket?
Better, I would say.
That's a good question.
I think it's in the not good bucket, but
yeah, I think if I don't want them to watch television, I think I would rather have an AI Barbie that's personalized versus them sitting in front of a television for 2-3 hours, maybe having a conversation. So I think I would say better, I think, versus
now. Now I am so fascinated by this thing. I want to go buy it and test it out.
Right.
No, like we've talked about it so much. I'm like, I have to see how this thing works now. Like,
right.
Anyway, okay. I think we've done this one to death. So Paul, this is your. I'll bring up this on screen, and then you can. I got the tweet up for you.
Okay. Perfect. Okay. Yeah. So Meta is. Meta hired Alexander Wang through acquisition. He is now the head honcho of Superintelligence Group at Meta. So he leads more or less the AI efforts at Meta. But of course, if you know, there's also someone called Yongle Kerr, who's been the head of AI at Meta for the past, I don't know, a bit more than a decade. So now there's kind of like this weird duality where the initiative undertaken by Alexander Wang is this super intelligence is coming, as seen here in the tweet. However, like if you read or listen to all of Yongle Kerr's talks or publication, he's actually not so optimistic that AGI super intelligence is right around the corner. So this is interesting because this is a obvious rift in the storyline of Meta AI. Now, what I'm going to just throw this opinion out there. How much of this is smoke and mirror? How much is, you know, Meta has to do this, or they essentially lose talent to other companies like OpenAI and, you know, even Microsoft and Google. So they have to say this.
What do you think, Charlie?
I don't know. I've honestly always been surprised by Meta's AI push. I think if they would have used, like, as all the companies that need AI for their survival, like Google or Microsoft, I've always never thought really Meta as that company. I've always felt like they need it for their metaverse. They need it for Facebook. And, you know, AI is definitely makes sense for them so it doesn't go sideways. But the push for super intelligence, that to me has always been super interesting as to what is really Meta's goal. And so that's kind of like for me, numero uno, just to understand where Meta's coming from, why they put so much emphasis on AI.
I think I have an opinion here, and it's pretty much all cost because of lack of AI initiatives by Apple. So like Meta's entire push into AI is like personalized AI, right? Like they're the first ones with Llama, a open sourced, personalized small model that anyone can use. You can host it on your machine. They're all like full on into the open AI model. Sorry, the open source AI models, not open AI.
Right.
So they're trying to become Apple, right? Like they are trying to create a hardware company, as you see, you know, with Meta's glasses that can deploy their AI everywhere. That can be marketed as like a personalized AI.
Right.
Left to be seen if they would be successful or not.
So this is on the heels of this, right? So like they overspend perhaps for a bunch of AI talent. And then like a week later, they put the brakes on the AI spend. It all seems really haphazard to me over at Facebook. You know, I think what Wang is doing is cool. I think he's got awesome hair. I always support that, as do you, Charlie. Like I forgot, I didn't even mention that, but like excellent. And the idea that they're like, you know, putting someone in place who is more, let's use the term, optimistic about super intelligence, like seems logical. And like if I was Mark, like I want to get the value out of like the new race car I just bought, right? So I understand the political angle there, but then to come out like a couple weeks later and then make this big announcement, like, hey, we're putting the brakes on our AI spend. Like, I found like a really big disconnect between that and like, or I'm not sure what it means perhaps. Like, do they feel that they have what they need? Like I have trouble like synthesizing the two things, right? Spend $100 million on an AI engineer and then put the brakes on my AI program. Like, I mean, one conclusion is that it was exactly perhaps what most people speculated, that it was purely a, I'm trying to get the right term. Like the move was to block and prevent other people from utilizing the talent, and they have no intention of like actually doing anything with it. They brought all these people over, paid them off to like essentially go retire to just pull them out of the game.
Interesting. I'm not sure if that's conspiracy theory land or if that just makes sense. Like, for instance, did Elon and Mark get together and Elon was like, I won't go into Facebook territory if you do this thing for me and you hit on the kneecaps of Sam Altman. I don't know. Like, maybe who knows how deep that goes. But I, you know, it's funny because for me, the metaverse was also something Zuck spent $15 billion on. And then just sort of ended the whole project and moved over to AI. So it is kind of his style of leadership, which is to just really move fast and break things and see what sticks. So it also could just be, it could be either or. I mean, there are reports supposedly that Elon and Zuck did try and buy OpenAI that came out this past week as well. Mm. So it could be either or, but you know, the AI personalization piece makes sense. And Meta's trying to get ahead of Apple for the next product release, which is the glasses. And so, yeah, it can be either or. Most conspiracies are true, by the way. I'm not saying anything negative about being a conspiracy.
I'm a conspiracy theory fan. That's how I would put it. I don't know if I believe in all of them or believe in a lot of them.
Wrong nomenclature on my side. My apologies.
I guess I'm big on them being debunked ultimately. Right. Like, mm-hmm. crop circles. Like, I love that guy who came out and showed how he was making them all. Like, they're not aliens, in my opinion. they're just some guy with like a case of beer, and he's got like a piece of wood and some string, and he's just making cool designs. And then I even know, like, I've talked about this before, but my friends are the guys who made the Hello Kitty crop circle. I don't know if you guys have ever seen that.
That's amazing.
But it's one of my favorite marketing stunts ever. They got some money and they made a crop circle and it was in the shape of Hello Kitty, and Hello Kitty paid them to do it. I'm really taking this a different direction.
This is amazing.
But that's okay. Like, look, it's a competitive space. I think like it's a common strategy to like hire people away and then like maybe not utilize the talent, like to help thwart competitors. Right. Like, ChatGPT is clearly like the leader right now. It's a great product, 1 billion users. Like, we've never seen anything like it before. And when anyone tries to tell me that AI is a bubble and it doesn't work, all these things, I just point to like, dude, adoption. Someone made a product that like 1 billion people use and is giving Google a run for its money. So there's something like very real right there. Like, how good it'll ever be. Like, I don't think it'll ever drive cars in the snow and in Canada, but that's okay. It doesn't have to do that. Right. That's not what it needs to fulfill on.
The fact that they
built a product that's like a superior product to like perhaps search is amazing. Like, no one has been able to come close to doing something that was better than what Google has been doing for a long time. And there was a point where there were a lot of competitors. There's a lot of people that tried to do things in the search space for years, and no one could even like get close. And then, you know, 3.5 comes out on ChatGPT and like insane, like it's crazy. So there's something real there, like how far it goes and how much hardware we need. And I don't think anybody knows the answer. And like, yeah, are people overly excited about it? Sure. They always are when something's new, but it's a real thing.
Okay, that makes sense. Thank you for explaining. So it's actually the platform itself is a threat to Meta, not just, and that maybe is the push for AI companions on both Meta and X's side, because they're trying to get ahead of potentially OpenAI being able to create something like that from like a social media pure AI perspective.
I think that's dead on. I think that's exactly what's going on.
Right. That makes a lot of sense.
That like,
probably, sure. Yeah. No, they probably got wind that Sam's probably trying a social network behind the scenes, and it probably has something to do with it. Yeah.
I mean, like, I don't think it's secret. Like, they were, I thought, pretty public saying that they wanted a social network, one's going to launch, like a ChatGPT social network.
Right.
I absolutely see the potential. I'll go on record saying it'd be the worst named social network ever, the ChatGPT social network. That's just terrible. Like,
it's World.
Oh, is that what it's called?
Yeah.
Better.
Iris scan thing.
Oh, is the Iris scan technology the social network?
Yeah. It's this thing.
I think World's a terrible name personally. Like, yeah. I'm on the World, and in the World I downloaded the World. Like, it doesn't make any sense.
It has the, it's a block.
Oh, right. World coin. You're right.
World coin. And it has like the iris scanner that you can scan your iris to identify yourself as a real human. It's a lot.
Dude, no one's using this.
Maybe some, like, I think if they pay people to do it, some people would. So like in, I don't know, Africa, maybe, I don't know.
This is not the killer app. It needs to be.
No. But like they might do partnerships, right? Like there's rumor that Reddit might use their World ID infrastructure to identify real humans. So there's partnerships.
Yeah, I'm skeptical. It's like one of those things that like there's always been these universal IDs and open. I can't remember. There's been so many initiatives. I mean, even Facebook had their Facebook Connect. It's gone, right? Does anyone use that anymore?
Facebook Connect.
Do you guys even remember that?
Why do I know that name? I don't know what that
Facebook
name.
Connect is like the login with Google. It's login in Google and login with like Apple, right? You don't see login with Facebook anymore, but right. Like Facebook is the one who pioneered, and it was called Facebook Connect and like login with Facebook, but no one wanted to do it. It was everywhere at one point. I worked with a mobile app where they were like, we have this login with Facebook thing and like half the users don't do it. So we have to do like create your own account with an email.
That's hilarious.
Anyway, it's 1 o'clock. Charlie, I want to thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for jumping on.
Likewise. Great conversation. I enjoyed this. Many things. I would say from the last one that we did, this one is steadily improving the quality of these podcasts, and it's really enjoyable. And like I genuinely came away from this conversation feeling enlightened and entertained. So, and that's like the two greatest qualities of any podcast. So a job well done and good to be
awesome.
Here.
So I always aim for like a C+, B-, right? Like if you're getting an A, you're not gonna deliver any ROI, right? You just spend all the profits. Like you just get a C+. I want to save some room for
improvement.
For profit margin. You get an A, it's like I just spent like it's totally perfect. Like I spent everything. Right. Anyway. Yeah, I know.
Mr. Beast.
Great having you on. Paul, always a pleasure.
Likewise. Charlie, how can people find you? Social media?
Definitely my X account, x.com/Razru_chief. Yep. That's definitely where I'm the most active, and X is perfect. Where it's at for me. Yes. In the arena.
In the arena. Charlie in the arena agreement. Okay. Enjoy the rest of your day. Everyone?
All right, likewise.
Thank you.
Okay.
All right. All right, see ya.